trending now. Here's the top five at five.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's the stories trending now in sports.
Right here.
Right here.
On 1320 KFAN.
Number five.
And you're still fighting for your position. That's really what spring ball is all about. For the veteran guys, the upperclassmen, I mean, they've already proven themselves. Spring ball is kind of, I mean, half of them sit out of spring ball. It's not really that necessary. They're still trying to get healed up from the prior season.
That's David Nixon joining us earlier today. The top five at five, the five biggest stories in sports today in the state of Utah. And the big story coming up Monday, BYU spring football gets underway, but they had some shenanigans going on today as well.
Yeah, they went paintballing today, and as a team, anytime you can get together with all 100 of your teammates, it's a rare event. Now, there's only 85 scholarship players, but there's usually 20 or 30 walk-ons, which means, yeah, there's 100 guys that you technically are teammates with. You just can't be friends with that many people. Most of the time, you're working out with and meeting and hanging out with your position group. So if you play wide receiver, you might not know a lot about the linebackers or the defensive line necessarily, unless you go on one of these trips, you go on a team hangout to a water park, or you go do some paintballing. But you asked earlier who the best paintballer was at BYU. Well, I'm going to go with experience. I'm going to go with craftiness. And I'm going to go with, you know, a strategic decision here with the shortest player on BYU's football team. That's their four-year starting center, Tijon Karoma, only 5'8". I imagine he was hiding behind a lot of car tires and maybe like park benches.
Tanner Mangum should have the best accuracy as a quarterback. But who's the quietest guy? Who do you want crawling around like a sniper? I mean, I would have taken either the Juergens brothers if they were still there because they're tiny little guys.
Oh, I'm going to go with Tomasi Laulile. He's a guy that is a
silent assassin. Yeah.
We've never heard that guy speak before. In fact, I'm not actually sure he can, but I know that guy can ball. I'm not messing with Tomasi Laulile coming off the edge, man. What about Fred Warner, though? I would imagine Fred Warner's hair made him a severe target during the paintball session. Now, in all seriousness, Fred Warner and Butch Pau are studs at linebacker. I think they're team captain candidates. Tanner Mangum, Tijon Karoma, they're clear team captain candidates. I like BYU's leadership right now. And the more and more we talk about the wide receiving core at BYU, you know, maybe we're overblowing this thing. Ty Detmers told us he's not committed to running three and four wide receiver sets. He's fine with running two wide receiver sets. Maybe BYU is fine with Jonah Trinneman at wide receiver, Moroni Lualu-Putu-Tau at tight end, and just kind of working off those two, because BYU's going to run the football next year. They ain't throwing it 50 times a game.
The nice thing is, and I think the most important position for BYU to figure out is that running back spot. They have candidates. They've got bodies there that can step up. Squally Canada has done it in the past. They've got K.J. Hall coming back next year. I mean, they've got guys who have stepped up and played well in that spot, and then they've got new bodies coming in, and Ulatulutau as well. So they've got some talent there. They're just going to have to figure out which guy is most reliable, who's not going to put the ball on the ground, and who can carry the ball 20 times a game, because I think by the end of the season, you're going to be relying on that.
Speaking of K.J. Hall, did you notice that his cousin, Arsenio Hall, finally dropped his lawsuit against Sinead O'Connor? Sinead O'Connor had accused Arsenio Hall of being Prince's drug dealer, and Arsenio Hall hit her with a defamation suit.
I mean,
so we'll see if K.J. can bounce.
That's nonsense.
No, that was definitely going on. Arsenio Hall had a defamation suit. He said, I've never dealt drugs.
But then finding out some wide receivers for BYU as well to complement what should be a good offensive line, a lot of returning talent. And then, of course, Tanner Mangum stepping up to be the man full-time at quarterback. And I think that's what BYU fans are most excited to see. Heck, it seemed like that's what BYU fans wanted to see most of the year last year. They were excited to get Taysom back, and then they realized, oh, Taysom, even with Ty Detmer there, is not a pro-style quarterback. He's not a drop-back passer. He's not accurate. He can't do a lot of the things that you need to do in Ty Detmer's system. And they started calling for Tanner Mangum. Now, when you did see him in the bowl game, he didn't look like a superstar, but I imagine that changes pretty quickly.
Well, don't judge Tanner Mangum on how he plays in a monsoon. That bowl game in the Poinsettia Bowl was just the worst possible scenario. Tanner Mangum has a month to prepare and stress out for this, trying to fill in for Taysom Hill. Just a weird scenario. I'm really optimistic, if I'm a BYU fan, that Tanner Mangum can capitalize on his very first offseason ever, a full offseason as a starter. Now, I wonder if BYU is going to change their mind on opening up some practices. So far, the spring game is going to be open, And the practice down there in St. Jorge is going to be open as BYU's trying to show off for the top recruit in state, Penei Sewell. And I think BYU's got a good opportunity to make a big impression down there. But I assumed Kalani Sitake was going to open up a little bit and give the fans some insight, but there's no indication that Kyle Whittingham's going to ever do that. And Kalani learned a ton from Kyle Whittingham. Maybe Kalani's just going to go full Kyle Whittingham and stop taking naps and shut down practices and start working out every day.
I won't be surprised if that is the case going forward. Now, they've got some things to work on, but maybe Kalani just doesn't want the distraction. And this is not bad for BYU. In fact, it's one of the reasons why BYU is still relevant, despite the fact that they don't belong to a major conference or any conference altogether. The fans are borderline sycophantic at times. I mean, they are obsessed with BYU, and sometimes when that's at every practice, I think that can become a lot. When you get a lot of the message board guys hanging out at practice, I'm sure that feels like a lot. When you can separate yourself from that a little bit, knowing that it's going to be there regardless, I think that might be beneficial for BYU.
BYU does have a really unique fan base that wants to get their eyes on this product, and there is optimism around Ty Detmer and Ilyasa Tuiaki, but remember, these guys were rookie play callers last year, and they played called a good season. They called a very good season this year.
Right.
They called a very good set of plays, for crying out loud, in their first year as play callers. Now I think you're going to see those guys open up and come to a greater level of comfort. And then it's just about getting the right guys in for your system. I think BYU's offensive line's got to gain some weight, and I think they got to continue to add some depth. BYU's defense should be better in 2017 than it was in 2016, but that's not saying much. The defense wasn't a strength last year. I think they'll be good in the secondary. I think the offensive line's going to be improved in 2016. But you know, but before we get talking about this air raid offense, I mean, understand, Ty Detmer's running a pro-style offense, which pro-style is a term that used to just be the style. It used to mean, yeah, you run the ball with Emmett Smith 30 times a game. Pro-style concepts are concepts that revolve around running the ball, getting yourself to third and short. It's not this throw it on first down, try to impress people with your stats. No, if Ty Detmer has his way, BYU could be only asking Tanner Mangum to throw the ball 20, 25 times a game.
Still going to need to find some bodies out there at wide receiver. Jonah Trinneman's going to be out there and be in the rotation. Moroni Lualu-Putu-Tau, despite the fact that he's playing tight end, he might just be a guy who's lined up every down regardless. I mean, he's going to be out on the field pretty much every play. And BYU's going to try and find some more playmakers from there. They'll have pass catchers out of the backfield as well, though, and I think that's something that will be a strength under Ty Detmer. Questions about the secondary. Good cornerbacks next year. You got to find some new safeties, though, to step in and be able to play. You probably won't see the starters necessarily in spring, as you've got some incoming freshmen in Chaz Ayu who might step in and win one of those starting jobs, but the linebackers should be good. The D-line's probably got to figure out a couple of bodies, exactly what that rotation is. But the nice thing is I think they have a nice rotation of bodies. They will have big names to put there.
They got good-looking athletes like Handsome Tenyelu, who's coming off a rough season last year. Clearly, he had an elbow injury, and that set his development back. Once BYU gets the full body, the full grouping of bodies in, though, then they can implement their scheme. Remember, they didn't have enough total numbers there on campus when Coach Tuiaki took over. They were running a 3-4 scheme that relied on nose guards. Now you need more playmaking style defensive tackles. It's a little bit different prospect you're going after. Now, don't expect Tanner Mangum to light it up every single scrimmage all spring. He might not play a ton, like you're mentioning. Tanner Mangum's proven himself. BYU is looking for some depth, though, at wide receiver and even a backup quarterback.
Yeah, they're looking at a backup quarterback, so some reps there will be valuable, though they can't waste any opportunity that Tanner Mangum gets out there. He's going to get the majority of the reps, and we'll see what they're able to do behind him.
Number four.
Well, I think they're kind of in a pack of teams in the Western Conference, you know, second tier, that all just kind of decided to sit tight, right? I mean, the Clippers, the Spurs, the Jazz, throw the Grizzlies in there, too. I don't know if this is sort of contentment with their current roster and their current direction, or if it's a little bit of, maybe justified Warriors fear.
That's Ben Golliver joining us from Sports Illustrated earlier today, getting a breakdown on the Utah Jazz. I think that's a good point that he made. While you may not say the Jazz made the same moves to improve that Oklahoma City did or that the Houston Rockets did, Houston may have had to try and add some firepower because that system traditionally hasn't worked when you've gotten into the postseason. Memphis didn't make any upgrades. The Clippers didn't make any upgrades. The Spurs didn't make any upgrades. maybe all these teams are just saying, we don't really know how we're going to compete against this Golden State team until we see what they look like in a seven-game series. Now, you might get swept. The Spurs might get swept. Look at what happened last night with the Clippers when they went up against the Golden State Warriors. They gave up a 50-point third quarter. Understand that neither team in the All-Star game this year scored 200 points, meaning averaging 50 points a quarter, and the Clippers gave that up in the regular season.
Yeah, but it's easy to say that the Jazz or Memphis or the Clippers, they were fine with their own roster. We don't know the deals that they tried to make and whiffed on. It appears like the Jazz were trying to move Derek Favors. They didn't, so that means that that was a failure. It appears like the Jazz were in talks with Lou Williams. Lou and the Lakers and the Jazz couldn't come to an agreement there. Well, that's a failure. And it's easy to say afterwards, ah, you know, we love our team, we love our guys. Sure. Well, Derek Favors doesn't feel that way. He's heard his name bounce around with a number of different trade rumors. Now, the Jazz have to answer for all these things if they don't have the success in the playoffs that they want this year. The Jazz will have to answer for this if and when the nuclear option takes place, if Gordon Hayward opts out and leaves for less money. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think Gordon Hayward saw enough at the All-Star game, and I think he's going to be torn. I think it's going to be a tough decision from Boston and to play for his old coach and Brad Stevens, but I think Gordon's going to commit to his legacy here in state. And then it really doesn't matter. Because if Gordon Hayward's going to go to Boston to win one playoff series, well, my goodness, have you ever talked to someone from Boston? I mean, the average guy is not as nice in Boston as they are in Salt Lake. So I think that's going to matter. And I don't know if internet speeds are faster here. I'm assuming they are. Gordon Hayward is a video game nerd here who, yes, he wants his legacy to be about more than just making money, but he's not going to the Eastern Conference Finals every year as a Celtic.
Jazz back in action tonight against the Milwaukee Bucks. No Jabari Parker. He's done for the rest of the year with an ACL injury, though they did get Chris Middleton back, who the Jazz haven't seen yet in the first appearance. Keep an eye on that for the Jazz tonight. But this is a game where second half of the season, the Jazz need to keep winning games, and you should beat the Milwaukee Bucks. You're better than they are. Keep an eye on the game tonight.
Number three,
trap games, according to the ESPN Pac-12 blog for the University of Utah. They've got a must-win game and a trap game for every team in the Pac-12. They've got Utah's must-win game as the game against UCLA at home in early November. I think UCLA's going to be pretty good next year. They're talented. They should have Josh Rosen back. Their offensive line was decent last year. It needs to get better, though. The defensive line needs to continue to play well, though they're losing Tack McKinley. They're going to have talent, though, and they should be maybe the only team who has a realistic shot at dethroning USC next season.
Well, but you could have said that about UCLA each of the last 2 years. And the thing that Utah has going for them against UCLA and USC is they've outcoached those schools recently. Jim Mora is going to have a hot mess of a football team next year. I'm with you. I think UCLA is going to start better than they did. I think they're certainly going to win more than four games. But UCLA might be an eight-win team that still disappoints this year. I think if Utah can't beat UCLA in Salt Lake with a down team the way they could have this year, well, then, yeah, that's going to speak to the talent gap between these two teams. But I'm not sure this is Utah's year to win the Pac-12 South either. Utah beat UCLA in 2016. They beat USC. They had a great season, but it wasn't enough to win the actual division. Utah's offense is not going to be more efficient this year. They're losing four offensive linemen. You're losing Joe Williams at running back. You're losing Tim Patrick at receiver. Corey Butler, Bird. It's just not going to happen, though. Utah's defense is going to be good up front. The linebackers are going to be good, I think, but you're replacing the entire secondary. So I think Utah could be a very talented, maybe 7 or 8-win team, and it still wouldn't be a bad year. But the South is going to stop and start with USC. If they can find an offensive lineman or two, they should be that elite team. But the trap game for Utah is an interesting one. It's an Arizona team starting out conference play. Arizona coming off just a dreadful year. But there's no denying that Arizona's trying to get to the edges to beat you, and Utah's trying to stuff up the middle and beat you up front in the middle there with their bodies and with their size. It's never going to be a good matchup with Arizona. And Utah can't get complacent just because Arizona was down in 2016.
But this will be a good test of Utah's new speed that they added in the secondary this year with some JUCO bodies coming in. That's where Utah is trying to get faster. Same with the wide receivers. That'll be a nice measuring stick for Utah going into the Pac-12 season.
Number two,
looking at in the top five at five, three locals show up in Eric Galco's Optimum Scouting Top 100 Players coming up in the NFL Draft. Now, it's not a mock draft. It's just a ranking of his top 100 players, but he's got Garrett Bowles coming in at number 7.
The top offensive tackle off the board for Eric Galco. Now, like you mentioned, it's not quite as strategic as a mock draft. And that's what a guy like Galco will say. It gives him some leeway because he's just talking about the top prospects. But if Garrett Bowles runs 4.9 or better, I think he's a top 20 pick in the draft. Now, if he runs 4.8 or 4.7, he's going to be the number one tackle taken. Your 40 time is so meaningless as a tackle unless you run a 4.7 or a 4.8. That's the equivalent of a receiver running a 4-flat 40. Receivers do run 4.2 and 4.3 40s. When a tackle goes 4.7 or 4.8, it's like a running back running 4.1. It's just it's like a unicorn. You draft that guy based on his freakish athleticism. Now, unless Garrett Bowles has really short arms or something, I mean, unless he's got some medical issue, if he's got a bulging disc or something that we only find out about at the combine, that could affect things. But we started telling you in September that Garrett Bowles was a special player. You so rarely see guys moving that well and just dominating levels so completely the way that Garrett Bowles did. We knew he was going to be special this year, and he's shaping out to be that type of guy.
Marcus Williams came in at number 49 on this list for the University of Utah, and then Jamal Williams comes in at number 96 for BYU. So we have three local players who end up making it in the top 100. Man, I've never been so insulted in my life. We had two people just come up and give you a high five, and they acted like I wasn't at the table.
Well, shout out there to our young man here. He got himself a golf club here. I didn't catch his name, but yeah, he did want a high five. You see, him and his dad were both wearing Utah sweatshirts, and I think they recognize that I am arguably one of the greatest players ever at the University of Utah.
That hurt. Get to number one.
Number one.
Wait, JP, why did you play the laugh? No, I was a team captain at Utah, which makes me arguably one of the greatest players of all time.
You're preposterous.
Say it to my face, JP.
Some financial numbers released.
What's your first name, Jabroni? What does the J stand for?
Financial numbers released for Alabama. They brought in over $100 million in revenue for the football team alone. We got a hold of the numbers for Utah in their athletic department last week. Utah's athletic department made $79 million. They spent $78 million to keep the athletic department, to keep the lights on. So they made about $1 million profit. Overall, it's an athletic department. Alabama made $104 million on the football field alone and only spent about $56 million, meaning they made just south of $50 million in actual profit
last year
on their football team.
Which is just insane, and good for the Bama program. We certainly knew that Bama and Clemson and Michigan and Ohio State, we knew programs like that were operating in a surplus. I didn't realize it was $50 million different just in football profits. My goodness, and you brought up a good point. Maybe Utah football is profiting by $20 million. Maybe it's $30
million. Yeah.
They must be spending a lot of money on women's field hockey or whatever, men's soccer, whatever the other programs are spending all that money. Now, Bama is not going to win with money, but Bama is going to win by spending more money to go out and travel and meet with recruits more. You can meet with guys face-to-face as many times as you want in some areas, but it takes a lot of money to fly and do that. Well, if Bama's got, what is it, $2 million a year they can spend on travel alone? Well, that's one thing. What about the $2.2 million in miscellaneous expenses? Man, to me, the moment I saw that number, I went right to the latest allegations against Ole Miss, where Ole Miss got caught giving a recruit $13,000 in cash who didn't even go to the school. And then on top of that, did you see Ole Miss is trying to throw stuff out there? They're trying to sell out
Mississippi State.
They're saying, Ole Miss is saying they have a recording of a recruit's mother saying what she already got from Mississippi State, as if that's somehow going to help Ole Miss.
They're just trying to shift the blame on anyone else. They're trying to allow Hugh Freeze to keep his job, and I think that's their major issue.
If you have been looking for an RV or a motorhome or a trailer, go by Terry's RV today, terrysrv.com, or 5545 South and State Street in Murray. They've been in business for over 50 years, helping families in Utah enjoy the great outdoors. So stop making your wife and kids sleep in a tent. If you're in a tent at night, there's a 71% chance that a Yeti's going to attack you. Protect your family with an RV from Terry's RV today, 5545 South and State Street, or terrysrv.com.
We're live at the Southtown Expo Center for the Wasatch Golf Expo. If you can't make it down today, we're open till 7, but if you can't make it down today, stop on by. Check us out tomorrow at 9 to 5. All attendees get a free round of golf. Tickets are available at the door. But stop on by, test out some new equipment, get entered to win trips, different golf clubs, different golf apparel, and there's free lessons for and clubs for the kids if you stop on by and see us. We're at the Southtown Expo Center. It's the Wasatch Golf Expo. When we come back, we get you ready for the Jazz and the Bucks with Aaron Falk from the Salt Lake Tribune. Stay tuned. Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAN.
Gunther and Ben in the afternoon.
Gunther and Ben, 1320K fan, 525. We're hanging out at the Wasatch Golf Expo at the Southtown Expo Center. Starting to fill up a little bit here. Stop on by. They've got an indoor driving range if you want to come on down, hit some balls. But bring the kids down. Kids get free lessons and clubs, so make sure you swing on by at the Southtown Expo Center. We're going to be open up until 7 o'clock tonight. They open again tomorrow at 9 o'clock and go until 5.
We're going to get you a free round of golf if you come on by here with every ticket to the Wasatch Golf Expo. We've got some blender bottles here to give out, and Ben and I are still willing to hand out unsolicited golf advice. I would tell you to never have your feet equidistant. Make sure that your feet are lined up like an offensive left tackle's
staggering
at any given point.
Like you're shooting a free throw.
I don't care left or right-handed. Get your left foot back. Put your right foot forward. Put all your weight on your right foot.
It's like a game of Twister or the Hokey Pokey.
It's like the show Game of Thrones.
Let's welcome in our next guest. You can find him on Twitter at Aaron Falk. You can read him in the Salt Lake Tribune. It is Aaron Falk. Aaron, thanks for joining
Aaron.
Us.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're getting ready for the Jazz game tonight, taking on the Bucks. The Jazz coming back without making any major changes. Do you suspect, though, that the fact that you did hear a couple of names tossed around, Shelvin Mack, Derek Favors, will that have an effect on them in the second half of the season?
No, I don't think so. I think that's kind of to be expected, especially for a guy like Shelvin Mack. I mean, you know, Derek Favors, he downplayed the that sort of thinking emoji that he tweeted out, saying that it wasn't about anything, but clearly it was about something, so I assume, you know, it's something that's on his mind, but, you know, once the deadline passes and everyone's still in the same place, you kind of have to move forward, and if Favors is getting healthier, you know, it can only benefit the Jazz, so.
It's easy to say now for a team that didn't make any moves that, you know, we're happy with our roster, but do you get a sense, Aaron, there was a move, there was a series of dominoes the Jazz wanted to fall? Was there a deal they missed out on?
You know, I do have to wonder if the kind of the turmoil, the change with the Lakers impacted their ability to get Lou Williams if somehow, you know, deals changed or something like that. Because I do think that made a lot of sense for them. It's a guy who Quinn Snyder had experience with in Philadelphia and Atlanta. And, you know, for a bench unit that struggled and an offense that sometimes stalls out, it would have been a really, really good fit, I thought. So I'm a little... I guess that's the one I think would probably I would think they would have liked to get done.
Aaron Falk, our guest, 1320 K fan. Well, now the Jazz come back to gear up for the second half of the season. Really, the issue in the first half of the year was health. Do they expect are they close to 100% going into the second half? They're still banged up.
Yeah, I mean, Ronnie Hood's going to be back in the starting lineup tonight, which is good news. I didn't get a chance to talk with George Hill the last couple of days, see how much his sprained toe had healed, and he's been playing on it, but it's clearly been hampered by it. Derek Favors seems to think his knee is better. I mean, you know, it's impossible to predict health, but this is a team that really, really has been banged up, and, you know, Quinn Snyder thinks that they probably practiced healthy maybe once or twice with a complete roster this season. So they were able to do that the last couple of days. You know, we've got 25 games to go. Let's see if it clicks.
What effect will the All-Star game, if any, have on Gordon Hayward, either psychologically or physically? I mean, are you expecting any changes to the young man after his first All-Star experience?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think it probably has to be a confidence boost. You know, he's been around USA Basketball. He's been around these guys. But to be in that situation and, you know, hear your name called and get that publicity, you know, I think it's got to boost his confidence a little bit, and we'll see. You know, I love all the conspiracy theories that come out of it. You know, that Isaiah Thomas lost to him as a skills challenge to try to recruit him to Boston in the summer and things like that. But I don't necessarily buy into all of that. I think it's just, you know, probably a good morale boost good bit of confidence in. And the All-Star break's a little longer now, so he was able to get to San Diego after playing in the game and still have a couple of days off to rest up.
Aaron Falk's our guest, 1320 KFan. A bunch of names being waived right now. I know people had speculated about the Jazz maybe getting in touch with Darren Williams. Sounds like he'll clear waivers and end up with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Do you expect the Jazz to make any waive any players of their own to try and get active in that situation, or do you think they'll run with this 15?
I think Terrence Jones is a somewhat intriguing name just because they haven't gotten great play from Trey Lyles of late. If you look at it, if they think that Joe Johnson can be that power forward in the second unit, maybe they don't need it. Terrence Jones has been really poor from 3 points this year, and not necessarily a great 3-point shooter for his career, but I think it's an interesting player. I'm not going to be surprised at all if these are the 15 guys that you see come playoff time that they haven't waived anybody and made a move. But I think that's probably the most intriguing name out there right now.
What's the most favorable playoff matchup for the Jazz in your opinion right now?
That's tough to say. I mean, I guess maybe before Lou Williams was traded to Houston, I might have said Houston just because I thought that not necessarily a great defensive team, and frankly a very with Harden extremely top heavy, and maybe if you run into an injury you have a chance to sneak by them. But man, it's a tough matchup. I think all the way across, this Jazz team hasn't beaten a Western Conference team in a playoff position since the middle of December. I think they're 0 for their last six. So I don't think there's any easy matchup for them right now.
One of the positions the Jazz were speculated at looking to upgrade at the All-Star break was the backup point guard position. But Dante Exum certainly looking better over his last 10 games or so. Did that factor in? And how do the Jazz feel about Dante Exum right now?
Yeah, I think that probably factored in. And Quinn Snyder was talking about going back to Lou Williams. It's a guy he saw come off of an ACL injury and kind of find his footing after an All-Star break, and then go, and then the next year he was in Toronto and won a Sixth Man Award. So I think they believe that he's getting to a point in the season where his knee is, he had confidence in it. He felt like he was 100%, but I think if you asked him and he looked back and was honest about it now, he's not, he wasn't as good as he is right now at the beginning of the year. So I think they do feel that way, that he's possible to turn a corner. But, man, George Hill's been hurt. If he goes down and all of a sudden Dante Exum's your starting point guard coming into a playoff series, it's kind of a scary thing. That's why I think, it made sense that they were at least looking at possible backup point guard options.
You can find him on Twitter at Aaron Falk. Read him in the Salt Lake Tribune. Great stuff, Aaron. Thanks.
Thanks, Aaron.
Hey, you guys have a good night.
There he is, Aaron Falk. Give us a good breakdown as the Jazz get ready to take on the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. And again, it's going to be about health, and they're going to need guys to have better second halves of the season than they had first half. And Dante Exum's a key member. So is Trey Lyles. Trey Lyles has been terrible this year. A really, really bad second season for Trey Lyles. If he can step out, get that week off, and kind of refocus, refine himself, and have a season similar to what he did last year where he was hitting the three at almost 40%, man, he becomes really valuable for the Jazz, and there's still that possibility.
Denial's not just a river in Egypt. The Jazz keep talking about injuries, and you heard Aaron Falk there say that Quinn Snyder mentioned he thinks they've only practiced healthy together 10 times all year. I mean, cry me a river. It just doesn't matter. It's pro sports.
Right.
Guys break down.
Ask the Clippers. They lost Blake Griffin and Chris Paul all season long.
Yeah, Gordon Hayward's not going to factor that in if he decides to opt out and take another team. How are we? Take a blender bottle, sir, please. Fire one up there.
Not this one. This one's mine.
No, that's
bad.
I don't have the bathroom key.
No,
guys.
Come on. Yeah, I don't know.
Got to
take
air.
A new one.
Yeah,
live on the air, so I don't know where the bathroom key is. It doesn't matter if this team's banged up or not. It's going to be nice to see Rodney Hood back, but Gordon Hayward's not going to wait around anymore and try to see more development from young guys and trust the process anymore. It's a win-now type league. And, man, I feel like we've asked 10 different people this question about, is there a favorable matchup for the Jazz in the playoffs? And we can't get a straight answer. Yeah, maybe Houston.
Houston's the most common answer we get, and that's kind of what I deducted a couple of weeks ago, just because they don't play any defense.
Well, and I always steal your answers.
Right.
So that's why I went with Houston as well. But then you saw them pick up Lou Williams. That's an even more dynamic backcourt. Now, Memphis is not going to lay down for you. They've got big versus big in the front court if you want to match up there. Golden State scored 50 points in a quarter last night. They look unbeatable. The Spurs embarrassed you the last time you saw them in the playoffs. I mean, I'm running out of names here. There's just not this matchup that you say, oh, as long as the Jazz get this seed, are they moving on to at least the semis? Now, the Jazz are very much up against it, trying to prove to Gordon they can win a game in a series.
You know what? Other than Golden State, I don't know who in the Western Conference is saying, I can't wait till that first round of the playoffs. Even the Spurs. I mean, they might have to play Russell Westbrook for seven games. Does anyone want to play Russell Westbrook for seven straight games, especially now that they've added
love and respect.
Taj Gibson? I mean, I did think that's going to be a really tough thing to do. And Guther's talking to people in the air. He's not just saying random things.
Oh,
in the
sorry. No, I apologize. I don't have the bathroom key, guys. Yeah, I don't know. We're on the air. We're live on the air.
I can
I don't
see
know
what
where
you're
the bathroom
doing.
Key is.
Everyone thinks you're just saying
just,
random words.
We're out here at the Golf Expo. We just met three bros who were...
rude of us to only give away two blender bottles.
We're out of blender
out.
Bottles.
We're out of blender
sorry,
bottles.
Sorry, we're all out.
So they had there was two left and three guys. You guys fight for it in the car.
You know, I do apologize there, Ben. Anytime that we
I'm
have
not
to...
I'm mad at you.
We have to do the bro exchange. Yeah. I'm very bad with handshakes.
It's just somewhat nonsensical, I'm sure, to anyone driving home right now.
Why are they talking over each other? Now, you see, I got the ADD.
Doing?
I got the attention deficit hyperactive. If you come up and talk to me while we're on the air, I will respond.
Coming up next, football at 50. We're going to look at the trap games and the must-win games for Utah in their upcoming 2017 college football season and get you caught up with BYU spring football. Stay tuned. It's Guther and Ben.
I'm 1320 KFan. I don't have the bathroom key, guys. Yeah, I don't know. We're on the air. We're live on the air, so I don't know where the bathroom key is.
Guther and Ben in the afternoon.
Guther and Ben, 1320 K Fan, 545. I apologize. He's Kyle Guther. I'm Ben Anderson, and we are hanging out live at the Wasatch Golf Expo at the Southtown Expo Center. Stop on by and see us today. We're going to be here until 7 o'clock, so if you're just getting off work, we'd love to have you come out to Sandy and check us out. If not, can't make it today, come see us tomorrow, 9 to 5 here at the Wasatch Golf Expo.
Man, bring the kids. They're going to have a ton of fun. There's all kinds of free products here hanging out. You can test out some of the latest technology, the biggest driver heads around. We've got ergonomic golf chairs. We've got the golf driving range over here. It is the Wasatch Golf Expo, the only one of its kind here in the state. Come on down here today or tomorrow, as Ben mentioned. Now, BYU football is having some spring practices next week, but you can't go if you're the average fan. The media is going to get to watch about 7 seconds at the end of practice. We're going to get to watch the team jog off the field. And, man, I tell you, I'm surprised that Kalani's not opening up more practices. Now, I think Utah most years will tell you that as long as the team's practicing in the stadium, they assume it's open to the public, and they're really not worried about you finding out anything. I would tell you, BYU doesn't need to be concerned that some fan's going to tweet out a picture of the formation. We've seen this offense before. We've seen this defense before. You don't need a blogger to speculate about Troy Warner or Fred Warner or Butch Pau. I mean, we know the strengths of this team. I'm surprised BYU's trying to hide under some secrecy.
You know what? Let me say this, and I'm not blaming the message board for BYU. I'm blaming all message boards for all teams. The fact that those exist and the fact that everyone has access to them, including parents of recruits, including recruits, the idea that there's going to be information that is however accurate or inaccurate as you want it to be made available to the general public, I get why they're trying to make sure that not everyone can go out and watch this. Because why, if you're a recruit's parent or you're a recruit and you're going to look up the school and you Google BYU Cougars, the message board's going to be one of the first five things you find there, and you're going to go out and read it, and they're saying, this guy looks bad. This coaching staff doesn't know what they're doing. This guy looks amazing. You've never seen a better player than this. I don't know why you would want that type of information coming out of practice.
Okay, that's a phenomenal concept. It's a great concern. First of all, don't ever talk trash about Cougar Board. It's the greatest website ever. Second of all, no recruit ever has gone on a message board.
Oh, you used to look for your own press clippings.
So help me, sweet goodness. The message boards were something that athletes didn't take part in. It was something that the fans could do.
But you didn't have Twitter. You didn't have Facebook
growing
up.
No, but I had MySpace. And guess what? I found a page one night. I was in my dorm room, and the page was Fire, it must have been 2005 or something. It was Fire Andy Ludwig. It was an official MySpace. Now, if it had been in the modern era, I probably would have been thrown off the team because I would have tweeted right at this guy, and I sent a horrible message. As it was, I sent this guy a message on MySpace that I'm a current member on this team. You are a complete idiot for saying to fire Ludwig. Ludwig's a great coach, and you take this crap off the internet, or I'm going to find you, and I'm going to knock your teeth out. It is so obnoxious when you, as a player, when you're in this brotherhood, you're in dozens of meetings every single week, you don't do that to yourself. You don't go and read the fan sites.
I think recruits do. I think kids do. I think kids go and look and see what people are saying about them and see what people are saying about the school.
You know, I think there's a small percentage of guys in the modern era.
Look at how many moms there are for professional basketball players in the state, for running backs in the state that do nothing but tweet about their kids.
Well, and the parents that do that are wrong. They really shouldn't. They absolutely
should. I mean, those guys are stars.
Well, they shouldn't. And the moms and dads need to get off of Twitter. It's never once helped a prospect.
I totally agree with you, but it does happen, and I get why you would try and say, all right, then distance ourselves from people who have access.
Cougar Board and fan blog sites at every school, they have access, and they have opinions, and they have insight. So help me. I mean, there's really no good that's going to come from reading a blog as an athlete.
I'm totally with you, and that's exactly why I would close off practice too, I guess.
No, but I don't think – I get what you're saying, and I think it's a valid concern from the outside standpoint. Inside these programs, there's just not a plausible chance that one person watching practice could break things down. Hell, the team can't necessarily – these coaches can't break down film while watching live and individually. They have to watch the film afterwards. Shout out to our guy,
Levi
who got himself a 1320 K-Fan blender bottle.
Here's the thing. I don't believe Levi's last name is Loving, though it says that in his Twitter
handle. Oh, you're saying Levi Loving is a...
Because he clearly loves everything he has, including this new blender bottle that he got. Looks like he's on his way home. Looks like he's having some fun from the Southtown Expo Center.
He's making us regret
passionately
giving him... that blender bottle.
Mouthing his blender bottle. Shout out to you, Levi.
All right, Levi. Yeah, well, I'm going to throw a retweet
on
that.
Yeah, retweet on that.
Because, well, I don't know what to make of that. He's passionately kissing that jug.
Lucky people in his life.
That's a lucky
Whoever
jug.
Whoever his lover is.
Man, that's a lucky jug. I'm going to go out here on a limb and say Levi is a passionate kisser.
Let's get to football at 50.
1320 K-Fan brings you football at 50. BYU, Utah, the National Football League. Every hour at 10 till the hour, it's football at 50 on 1320 K-Fan.
Looks like, is it Gene Simmons from KISS? I mean, that guy's got a...
I'm not going to.
He's got a tongue on him.
Far be it for me to judge your style here. Our guy Levi Lovin on Twitter just got himself a 1320 K-Fan blender bottle. And if you guys don't have a Twitter, he's passionately kissing the blender bottle in this photo.
His nose
is
all squished against the bottle.
Yeah. Remember the scene in A Christmas Story when the kid tries to put his tongue on the frozen bar? That's what this guy did. He stuck his tongue to his blender bottle. Now, it looks like he's in the passenger seat.
Thank goodness.
Like one of his buddies are driving here.
Yeah, well, we met Levi. Good thing one of his buddies is driving.
Well, hey, we're not here to judge.
Hey, total opposite. You're doing the right thing, Levi.
Thank goodness you weren't driving there. Are you going to be licking that blender bottle when you're on that traffic light there? What is that, 90th and State?
Yep.
I mean, when did you stop licking this blender bottle? We never washed that thing. I mean, that came straight from the factory. You got some bacon grease on your tongue now, son.
Trap game and must-win game for Utah, according to ESPN and the Pac-12 blog. The must-win game, according to the Pac-12, and I disagree with this, even though it's in a two-week span of a game that Utah must win. They've got UCLA. Utah plays UCLA at home, and then the next week they play Washington State at home. I'll just take a cop-out and say Utah has to win one of those two games.
You need to beat Washington State because Pullman, Washington, much like Corvallis, Oregon, where Oregon State plays, they're almost inhabitable. You don't want to be losing out on recruits, especially in Southern California, of guys that are willing to go up to Pullman, Washington. With all due respect there, I'm sure there's a lot of students who have fun there on campus and yuck it up and hang out there. But Salt Lake should be an easier place to recruit to. You don't want to lose out in recruiting to a school like Arizona or Washington State who have really low athletic budgets. There's no excuse in those scenarios. But Washington State, even though they have a different style than you have, they don't have the athletes up front. Utah really should never lose to Oregon State or Washington State. I mean, if you lose to Stanford, They've got a who's who of five-star recruits on campus. They've got some of the smartest players in college, some of the smartest students in college, let alone football players. That makes some sense, but it's inexplicable to lose, especially at home, to Washington State.
They've got the trap game as Utah's season or Pac-12 opener against Arizona, where they go on the road. Now, Utah gets to stay at home, or stay in the state of Utah, I should say, for all three of their non-conference games this year. They get, who is it, North Dakota State and San Jose State here in Salt Lake City. They have to travel to Provo to play BYU, but then they go down to Arizona. I don't have a ton of faith in Arizona, though traditionally they've given Utah a tough time while Rich Rodriguez has been there.
Rich Rod's style is one that's going to make it tough for Utah to get to the edge and just beat Arizona speed with speed. You know, so that's why it's a tough matchup, and Arizona's not going to solve their quarterback problems next year. Khalil Tate might be their nose guard next year after playing quarterback last year. Arizona's got this party school vibe, and that team, they showed some fight at the end of last year. They beat up on Arizona State, but I think I'm more unimpressed with Arizona State at that point. Back to Twitter, you and I mistakenly, and of course 100% accidentally, chose to wear the same outfit today. We have the same 1320K fan shirt on there. I tweeted out a picture of us that I thought was a pretty cool picture. I wrote that we were looking like twins. Now, Mikey T on Twitter sent us a response that said we looked like Goober Patrol.
Huh.
And I looked up Goober Patrol. Turns out that's an insult.
That's not a nice thing.
No, Mikey T said we look like goobers, indicating that we're slovenly males.
He's not wrong.
Man.
He's not wrong, Mikey. Hey, trap game for Utah? Colorado, the last game of the season. I mean, Colorado, I think Colorado might need that win against Utah to get bowl eligible next year, just understanding how much they're losing. I could be wrong. They won 10 games this year. I don't think they get back there next season. But that's going to be a game where they're going to come home and need to beat Utah. Let's say Utah's sitting at 6 or 7 wins at that point, and they don't really need the game because they're not going to win the Pac-12 South, and they're already going bowling, and Colorado really needs the game after Utah just played Washington and has to come back home, and you think, ah, it's senior night, we'll win. That's a trap. That's the definition of a trap game to me for Utah.
I think you're right, and Colorado's clearly got some beef with Utah. They're both the new kids on the block, and they're trying to avoid that stereotype, but Colorado's losing 8 guys off that defense. This was a real spike in the Colorado program. In 2012, this team won 1 game. They were a 2-win team in 2014. They haven't climbed that hill. They haven't gotten over the hump yet. This is still a program that could be down in the dumps quickly. We don't even have a resolution for this Mike McIntyre story, where he promoted a guy who we knew was at least accused of a pretty egregious domestic violence here. So the Colorado program isn't necessarily out of the dumps yet.
Coming up next, we're going to get a breakdown on the BYU spring football, which kicks off on Monday with former BYU legend David Nixon. Stick around. It's Gunther and Ben
on 1320 KFAN Goober Patrol.